You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Daniel Howitt's interview with the cinematographer for The Last Duel, Darius Wolski, costume designer Janti Yates, and composer Harry Gregson-Williams.
There is only one question that matters. Do you swear on your life that what you say is true?
My father told me my life will be blessed with good fortune. I'm married. I was a good wife. And then was judged and shamed by my country.
I say before all of you, I spoke the truth.
A most unspeakable charge has been brought against you.
Jacques Legris entered our home. He attacked me.
The accusation is false.
I am telling the truth.
The truth does not matter. There is only the power of men.
This should be settled quietly.
I am innocent!
I request a duel to the death.
If you lose, your wife will suffer dire consequences.
One of us has lied. Let us let God decide.
You do not believe me.
I am risking my life for you.
You are risking my life so you can save your bride.
For bearing false witness is that you are to be burned alive.
I will not be silent.
Hello everyone, thanks for chatting with me today about The Last Duel. I'm here with costume designer Janti Yates, composer Harry Gregson-Williams,
hello,
and cinematographer Darius Wolski.
Hello.
Thank you all for talking with me today. So every department head is a storyteller, and with this film being three different versions of the same story, I'd love to hear from each of you. How did you use your craft to bring a unique perspective to each of the three versions of the story? Let's start with Janti.
Well, I was going to say, can I start? Because I changed nothing.
Okay. That's good to know.
You can move on.
Well, I'd actually like to dig in real quick. Were there any conversations about changing anything on your side of things?
In actual fact, no. We wanted to keep it as similar as possible. And so consequently, we did not go beyond just what we shot in Carouge's story.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Harry, how about you?
There are three distinct characters in the movie, the central characters, and those were with each of their story coming into focus in the three chapters. That's where I was able to explore in more in depth each of their thematic material that I'd created. So we discover most of that in the first act or the first chapter, but you know, in the second chapter, for instance, we do focus more on Legris' story and more on the sort of sonic landscape that I put around him, which was somewhat different to the other two characters. Matt Damon's character being the Carouge character being quite sort of solid and workmanlike. and Marguerite's thematic material is often sung. I had a really, really brilliant countertenor from England called Yestin Davis, who came and sang there, also a wonderful soprano, a very elite choir, a very small choir actually, where usually when one's recording choirs or organizing choirs, one doesn't want to hear individual voices. One wants what's called a round tone, a whole tone. But in this instance, rather than booking a great big choir, I had a small choir called Voces 8 with just 8 voices. So 2 voices in each part, soprano, alto, tenor, bass. And you can actually hear individual voices. And we really wanted that. And that was something I ran past Ridley. He was quite intrigued by. On Kingdom of Heaven, I'd used a lot of heavenly voices, as you can imagine, but that context was very different. I was scoring a lot of the battle scenes, a lot of that in Kingdom of Heaven. In this movie, with the battle scenes, they were dry. They were grunts and thrusts and knives and swords. And the music's job was to bring us to those moments. And then often to echo the sentiments of what's just happened afterwards, but to allow those the pivotal scenes like the rape, the battle scene, and the heart of the duel to keep them dry of music, and have the music serve as bookending, which is quite an interesting way, not something that one's often asked to do.
That's great. And Darius, how about you? How did you bring different perspectives to these three stories?
Well, we were trying not to make it obvious, you know, because when actors come to the same space, you know, the space looks the same, you know, so photographically it's the same. I think the key is in the dialogue and nuances and performances. I mean, that's what makes it different. Maybe the last chapter, Marguerite's, we use a little bit more like her point of view. We were maybe really use multiple cameras, but maybe we're a little bit more single camera just to be right into her eyes and stuff. But that was very subtle, that's all. And everything else was played.
I would imagine if you asked Claire Simpson, the editor, she'd have more to say about that. Because whereas I don't know how it went, Darius, but like, say, for instance, Legree entering the castle unauthorized, when he goes in after Marguerite. I love the way that it's shot in just...
But this is the nuance. I'm glad you picked it up. Because
it's beautiful. I love this. Even just when a regular sort of not particularly important Carouche arriving back from the battles in Scotland, and just the way that he's... You think, oh, I've seen that shot. No, I haven't seen that shot. And actually you see Marguerite's perspective of her husband coming home, or in her story, you see her perspective and he walks right past her. I love that. I thought it was really.
These are the nuances that we did. Yeah, that we did, like the using a single camera for Marguerite when Legree enters the castle.
Yeah,
that was done, and the whole rape scene. The one is shot on her back. I don't know if you've noticed, and her version is just on her face. All it is on her face. There's nothing sexual about it at all. It's just her face, you know. So, you know, those nuances, we have shot them. And of course, Claire used them brilliantly. You know, that's another person. Which, yeah.
Actually, Darius, can I ask a question relating to that? Because I wondered when I was scoring the film, during the rape scene, for instance, as you say, from Legree's perspective, we don't see it in Carouge's perspective, do we? In Legree's perspective, you're using a wider thing. We can kind of see what's going on. But in her story, it's mostly on her face. And my question is, were they filmed at the same time? They're just different cameras?
Yeah. When you shoot such an emotional scene, you want to do it as few times as possible.
Oh.
So that close-up was always there.
Right, I see. So it was chosen,
obviously was chosen editorially, and that's how we operate, you know. But when you're shooting a scene like this, last thing you want to do is, okay, now it's going to be your close-up. You're sucking all the true emotions and drama and actor's performance, you know. Maybe there's some special shots, but it's not real. I mean, the point was just to be as realistic as possible. And in a place like this, actors are truly charged. So you just want to just respect them, you know? They can only do it so many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, but you know, as a result, what are you describing? It's there. It's absolutely there.
It's interesting to know that you intentionally avoided sensationalizing it. That's really good to know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Janti, I want to bring it back to you. Janti, there are so many phenomenal pieces in the film that I wish I had time to really dig into each of them. But I wanted to specifically ask you about the dress that Marguerite has made while Jean is away. The harlot dress, as he refers to it. Could you tell me about designing that piece and how risque would that dress have actually been at the time?
Well, it was very risque for the country. Basically, Ridley always loves red dresses for harlots or for, you know, that sort of compromising situation. And red was perfect, but we wanted to classy it up a bit. So we had a lovely embroidered paneling in the center. But the whole thing is on the cleavage and the fact that her front was virtually nearly exposed. By that, I mean, you know, too low, really. And they might have worn that in Paris, but they certainly didn't wear it in even the suburbs, let alone in medieval southern France. So it was very fashionable, very Paris fashionable, but it was certainly a shock to a country gentleman coming home from the war.
How difficult was that piece to finally figure out what the right balance is between being so risque, but something believable that Marguerite would actually purchase?
Well, it was quite straightforward because obviously we knew what the fashions of the time were. And it was a dress that she had made locally. So I think it wasn't really a problem. It was just getting the fabric right, getting the shape of it right. And I thought it was a sensational dress. I didn't agree with Carouge at all.
Nor did I.
I thought that was my favorite part of the way you guys did that with costumes and when in the third chapter we see that just him, the simple thing of him coming home, and we see it three different ways, and that it is subtle, but it's really different, isn't it?
Yes, completely.
And musically, I was able to reflect that, particularly on the third telling, as it were.
Yes.
And when he leaves for the battle, too. When he leaves for the battle, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff, we did shoot different ways. Yeah, different. But not photographically, it's performance.
But isn't it cool that the choice was made to make these changes, these subtleties, for the audience to realize that something different actually occurred than what we thought? On just such simple scenes. They could, you know, you'd think they might be dialogue scenes where, or some sort of big close-ups or some sort of major events, but this is just someone coming and going. And yet it was powerful enough to show you, oh, right, what we thought happened, perhaps didn't happen like that.
I just hope that people have enough patience to go through it in the world of instant gratification and internet and all this crap.
That was my thoughts exactly.
I just hope that people have patience to sit through it, you know. Very special film, and the stuff occurs if you let it happen, you know.
I agree. I love how unique this format is for the film. That's interesting that both of you brought up those hesitations. Hopefully people will sit through the film. Did you have any conversations like that as you were in preparation for the film? Anything like that?
No, but what's amazing, brilliant about Ridley is that he's in the place in this career that he just wants to make a movie he wants to make. And this movie has to be long and has to take its time for the payback, which is phenomenal. I mean, the last act is phenomenal. I mean, when you really see her perspective.
Yeah,
I agree. And you can add to that, Darius, that it has to be the length it has to be, really, to be able to unfold properly to the audience. But rather than take the much trodden path, which would be to, in post-production, say, okay, Harry, look, we're 3/4 of the way through the film. Some people are going to be shuffling in their seats here. We want music. We want, you know, there was none of that. Music wasn't used.
Explain yourself too. Fantastic. Yeah. No, it's a deliberate choice. It's a deliberate choice. And that's what's brilliant about it. It's all about restraining yourself and making an impact in the end. You know, you just...
Yeah. And Harry, I wanted to dig into that a little bit more. Obviously, you've touched on the lack of an overpowering score. The score is relatively subtle here throughout, and there are stretches without much score at all. How did you find those specific places for the music to really have an impact?
Well, one of the first things that a director and composer do, and any composer hearing this will relate to it, is do what's called a spotting session. I believe that happens with the sound effects department as well, but I'm not involved in that. But we basically sit down and with a blank canvas and go through the film and say, well, what if music started as this character opens the door, comes in and plays underneath this dialogue scene, and then fades away at the end before she leaves, or something like that. So at the end of a spotting session, you might be left with 45 or 55 little cues, what we will now call them cues. So it's not a contractual thing. It's not like, okay, that's what I got to do and then I'll leave. That's more of a first impression. That could be our template. At that point, you know, I don't have to write in order chronologically at all. Having said that, because this the nature of this damn movie was the duel, and the first scene was the setup of the duel, I thought, well, I got to start here, really. So I did start at the beginning of this film. I don't usually start at the beginning of a film. I'll usually start somewhere I want to be invested in. But with this, the added challenge for me there was that when I started work, that scene, which is probably 3.5 minutes long now, in the final film, was about 8.5 minutes long at the time. So you might say, well, why did you bother writing, wait until they've cut it down? Because it was clear that it was going to have to come down. But that's not really my place to say that. And however, if I waited until I had a fine cut, I'd have probably only finished the music about 5 minutes ago. So with modern technology, they're, you know, it's not like they're cutting film somewhere. Mm. There's a click of a computer thing and then a scene has been trimmed. So one's got to launch off somewhere. And I thought, well, that's where I got to be. So, and quite oftentimes it's a little frustrating, but it means that I'm left with an 8-minute cue and I only need 3.5 minutes of it. So let's cut out the bits that aren't so good and focus on the good bits. So you can, that's where we get the real richness, the source, hopefully.
It's funny what you're saying, because it's the same thing when you're shooting a film. We're using multiple cameras, we're shooting scenes, we have just so many incredible shots and half of them go away, but it's okay. Yeah. I used to cry over some great shot. Oh my God, it was such a great shot. It's not, are you in the same place? You just have this great piece of music and it's like,
right.
It's really important as an artist to be able to throw stuff away.
Yes, Ridley's
very attached to it. No, because it's like,
no, you're right, Darius. And I think the last time I had a conversation with Ridley about this very thing, I think he involved alcohol in it somehow. It was something about distilling it, distilling a good drink down to its essence, which is very Ridley.
Like, we can go on about, you know, like everybody in every, like in music and images and shots in costumes, John D, I'm sorry, some of it is too black.
I'm sure in costumes, because you mentioned earlier, you have to reduce sometimes. You know, you probably have whatever you have accessorizing or whatever it is, and sometimes you find that you're reducing, John D.
Oh, I find a huge amount of costume I make never makes it to the screen.
Oh, there you go. That's what we're talking about.
But frankly, you know, when it does, it's stunning. John D, when it does, it's stunning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm short on time. One question before I let you guys go. Obviously, you've all worked with Ridley Scott numerous times. and have one more film with him coming out this year, House of Gucci. So for whoever would like to answer, any or all of you, what keeps you coming back to this creative partnership with Ridley Scott? Why do you love working with Ridley?
Why wouldn't you?
I'm gonna work for some boring director at home, and it's easy. And no, we all doing this because we love what we do, and he loves what he does. So that's why we're here.
He does. That's the key to it. He not only do we love what we do, but he loves what he does. He wakes up to do it, and it's very infectious. That.
True.
We're also very inspired by him. He's a genius, and just get very, very, feel very grateful to be asked again.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much. I appreciate your time, and really, I loved the film. So thank you all for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you for your kind words.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Daniel Howitt's interview with the cinematographer for The Last Duel, Darius Wolski, costume designer Janti Yates, and composer Harry Gregson-Williams. The Last Duel is currently playing in theaters. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also learn on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.